Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Syke.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So if you've stepped outside, it looks like summer has decided to stay with us for a little while longer. I actually ate my breakfast standing out on the deck.
There you go.
It was
warm enough.
That's
a good day. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So anyway, you're listening to the Investor Resources live broadcast. And it's live, which means you can call in and talk to us. We're here to talk about the markets. We just spent about an hour doing that on our webinar this morning. We do a monthly stock market update webinar on the first Saturday of the month, as long as it's not a holiday. And you can register for the next one. The link is already up and set to go. Just go to irradio.com, the lower left-hand corner of the website. You'll see webinar, a couple of clicks, your email, and you will get a registration link. Don't worry about losing it between now and then, because just before the webinar, a couple of days out, you'll get an update reminder with the link that you created. So if it gets lost in your email, fear not. You'll get a reminder to get you in. And if you can't attend because schedules change, we send out a replay link once the recording is finished. Anyway, you want to talk to us today about what's going on in the market. And as we spent time this morning, there's plenty to talk about. This is an abnormal market. We covered so many things that have never happened before in the market. When I say never, that's exactly it. Never in capital letters.
That's not an overstatement. That's what's going on right now.
We've heard that this time really isn't different. Well, this time is. And it's been interesting as we prepared for this webinar to look at the anomalies that are present with us today that have never in stock market history happened previously. Anyway, you can call in. We have an empty phone line right now that Rajiv is gone. The number is 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. Ben will put you on the board. Let us know that you are standing by, and as soon as we can shut up, we'll take your call. Anyway, you know, I was looking for the link that Ben had given us on the board for the gentleman who called in about I-bonds several weeks ago.
Yeah,
and I didn't find it on the board, but I do remember talking with him about I-bonds, and the rates are still really high. They're above 9%. Now, if we end up in recession and rates starts coming down, those rates are going to fall right along with it. But what's interesting for me is a couple of things. The difficulty there is in actually buying an I-bond. Now, do E-bonds still exist? I mean, I haven't heard anybody buying them lately. But you used to go down to the
double E's, yeah.
I'm not sure
either, Don. Yeah.
You go down to the bank and buy a double E-bond. I mean, the E-bonds are out of date. They're old. But I know my late mother-in-law used to buy one for every birthday for all of her children and grandchildren, which was more than 30 in the batch. So she's buying a lot of them. And then occasionally a client would come in with E-bonds, and sometimes, usually the parent had bought them and just handed them over and said, well, you know, can I cash it in? Sure you can. Except you can't just go down to the bank where you bought it and get cash, because they don't cash them in. You have to go to the federal government. And fortunately, there was a federal bank branch here in Seattle that you could go over there and negotiate your way to receiving your money back. So
that's a good way to put it, yeah.
I wonder how on earth that's going to happen with these I-bonds. They make it so difficult to buy them. The easiest way, theoretically, is online. But if your online identity doesn't match what the feds think it should be, you are in for a nasty, lengthy surprise to try to
trying
clean
to prove,
up.
Trying to prove who you are. That's right. It is important to remember, that's a government website. So
that's well, it's a government. Yeah, it's a government website there. That hasn't been updated since 2002.
Well, there so, we go. They're right on
so
top
you,
of that.
You have to ask, what has the Treasury done with all this money in 20 years that they can't update their bond website?
Well, they may. The conspiracy theory will say they don't want to issue bonds at 9% and above. So let's just make that a little tougher to get.
Okay, and they are. And if you can't log in successfully and get that done in a couple of minutes, you are looking probably at weeks to months to get your iBond access to purchase approved. And part of which includes snail mail sending documents back to the Treasury Department. We are really up to date at the government level.
Sounds great, doesn't it? It's like, here's this great product the government has for us, and, well, you can't really get it. Many, many people are having a very difficult time just getting access to the product. And then when you find out you have a problem, like you said, Don, getting that fixed, it could easily take you 6 months of you know, active engagement with the Treasury Department to be said, yeah, okay, it's okay. We'll sell you some, and you can finally get there. But for many people, that's a tough road.
Well, some of these testimonies about trying to buy iBonds, hour and a half wait on the phone and hang up. Hour and a half wait on the phone and say, well, we'll be right back. And after 2.5 hours, the cell phone battery died. Had to go through it all again, and finally did get somebody. But in many cases, this has taken several months to be able to get their identity certified at Treasury to be able to buy an iBond.
And they said you have a problem if you're online, if you have an internet bank, which are very, very common these days. But if they don't have a brick and mortar location, that's a no-no for the iBond people, and so they're still not up to date on that side either. So there are many roadblocks to getting that iBond. So if you're going to go try to get them, just be prepared. You can get there, maybe a long trip.
Well, if you're one of the unfortunates that can't get it done, then you need a medallion signature on a piece of paper to guarantee that you are who you are, and that's what has to be snail mailed back. Well, just try to get a medallion signature. This is not a notary. This is a very special stamp. When I was a branch office manager, I had a medallion stamp. So if somebody wanted to convert their actual paper stock certificate into digital on their account, we had to have a medallion stamp. And so I could do that. But there was a time.
Which illustrates that was a little while ago that we needed that.
Well, I remember when I was... I had a partnership that had matured, and in order to get my money out of it, I had to certify certain things and send the paperwork back. I had to just get a signature guarantee. So I went to the bank, the main branch in Tacoma, and, man, I could not believe the amount of work. Now, I've been with my bank for 50 years, so at this time it would take a couple of decades off. I'd been with a branch a long time, and they're saying, well, we don't know if we can guarantee your signature. Just exactly who are you, and what are these papers, and what are they for? Do you have the originals? I mean, it was amazing. So I can imagine, if you're trying to find a medallion stamp to buy an iBond today, be prepared for a high level of frustration, a lot of delay, and running from one location to another to try to get that done. Just getting a medallion stamp at your brokerage office used to be an easy deal. It no longer is. Even if you have an account at the brokerage office, it's going to be a hard process. So good luck with it. Anyway, why are inflation and iBonds attractive? It's because of inflation. And if we look at inflation, we are all complaining about what we see as the visible forms of inflation in our household budget. And if you want to talk about this stuff, you know, give us a call. We have an open phone line. We need to wake up Ben. He's sitting there in the production booth. In order to make the phone ring, you have to dial some numbers, and those magic numbers are 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. But in spite of inflation, if we put this in perspective, our lifestyles are much better off than they were 20 or 30 years ago. We don't think about this, but 30 years ago, you didn't have a cell phone. 30 years ago, most of us didn't have computers unless we were at work. We didn't have them in the house. In fact, I remember the first time I brought a computer home, my wife was aghast. What do we need that here for? For me, it was kind of how to learn how to operate this thing, because it was pre-Windows, so you had to know DOS language. We go back to the early 80s. Who had a dishwasher? Not very many. Air conditioning was still a rarity. I mean, if it got too hot, you just opened up more windows. Yeah, that one television was in the house. You know, so the smartphone has changed our life. Probably not quite as much as indoor plumbing did. But it's a game changer. And we don't think about that. In fact, the new cell phones that they bring out every year, they are massively powerful mini computers. And you're walking around with it in your hand or your hip pocket. This is the same thing that happened in the Industrial Revolution, which brought clothing prices down. It brought housewares down. The tech boom made services that were luxuries widely available. And we all felt more prosperous as we could afford to do these things. Houses became larger, had more than one bathroom. I mean, we take these things for granted today. So we've had a free lunch. We've had falling inflation, what we called it disinflation, because inflation was still there, but the rate of inflation was getting lower and lower and lower. And we had falling interest rates, which made it cheaper to borrow money to buy things that we were going to finance because we didn't have the cash. Interest rates were higher. We could save cash. We didn't want to spend it because we liked the interest rate we were getting. I mean, it's a combination of things that have brought us to this point where we now have to say the free lunch is over. And with that, we should probably take our break.
Mama said there'll be days like this. There'll be days like this. Mama said.
Like this. Well, so Perry's having technical difficulties staying logged into the station, and we had the similar difficulties when we started our webinar today. So there'll be days like this seems appropriate for bump music here. So when we went to break, I mentioned that we're done with the free lunch routine, and we've had it. And how's that happen? You take this stuff for granted. Say the Uber ride, which came out early, for $10, and they were undercutting cabbies. Well, the cab business had to pay for gasoline and labor and repairs, and they had to generate a profit. Well, yeah, that's business, right? Well, how did Uber do that for $10? Well, they borrowed a ton of money, and then they used that money to undercut the cab business. Well, when money was cheap, that worked. Netflix did the same thing. Netflix was cheap. They used the cheaply borrowed money to finance expansion. Subscription rates were low as they went out and they developed product. Interest rates going up, those numbers don't work anymore. So how do they survive? They raise rates, subscription rates, and people leave. That hurts the business. Stock price goes down because profits are going away. Even with enough volume, negative profits don't turn positive. I mean, that's the bottom line. We no longer have, or going to have for some time, cheap capital. And that changes the whole thing. So the Uber $10 car ride is now $50. And you say, well, if you're in an area where there's lots of cabs, you can say, cabs right there. You know, I'll just hop in and it's going to be 25 because I'm just going around the corner, whatever it happens to be. So low rates do not allow investors to sustain money-losing technology ventures, which is a lot of what has driven our economy in recent years. This is the shoe-to-drop scenario. You see this in other things that you do when you now get an additional charge that was never on your charge slip when you checked out. We get an extra charge for paying by credit card, or a debit card can have a different charge. Things that were opaque no longer on. We're saying, the businesses are saying, we can no longer absorb this. Wages are going up, rent's going up, we owe a loan, and the interest rate's going up. Sales aren't. I can't raise my prices on my sales because I am competing with the store across the street. So what do I do with that? And now we're seeing, on airline travel, you see fuel surcharges. Or in the restaurant, you're seeing kitchen appreciation fees. Yes, I do appreciate the fact that we had a dishwasher who cleaned the plate before they used it to serve me. I mean, who thought of that before? I mean, it's the old
It's always
movie.
A plus.
Who'd have thunk it? You know, these things. And this is probably the foreseeable future until we finally see some stabilization in the labor market and the ability for somebody to say, I don't like what you just said to me. I quit. Because I'm going to go across the street and I'll get a job and he'll pay me more money than you're paying me now. So what's the big deal? Well, it's a big deal to the guy who just lost the employee. This, however, will not last forever. Markets do eventually balance themselves out. But given all of that, you know, we don't like the current inflation charges that we're paying or the cost of things going up. But they are going to for a while. The only thing which has been dropping lately, which gets a lot of press, is gasoline. It has come off its high. I don't know how much lower it's going to go. It could easily bounce back up. But we touched on this in the morning webinar. And if you didn't get to participate in today's webinar, watch our, look for Monday's email. And we'll have a link for the replay in Monday's Week in Review email. And you want to watch that because we talked about energy. And part of the problem with energy is that people think it is gasoline or diesel fuel. And that's just a minor part of what the energy business is all about. Because if, as the president said during his campaign, when I think he was in Texas and there was a young girl there with her mother, and she asked him, are you really going to shut down the energy business so we go to clean fuel? And he said, look in my eyes. Yes, I am. That's the first thing I will do. And he did. That was his first action, was to shut down the Keystone pipeline and stop the prospects of new drilling and new production. But nobody's talking about the fact that we need oil for aspirin, safety glasses, shower curtains, paint rollers, wheels, hand lotion, candles, rubber cement, plastic wood, toilet seats. Oh, yeah, we're going to do without toilet seats? Right. We'll go back to outhouses and splinters, right? Okay, how about antihistamines? Purses, deodorant, footballs, basketballs, putty, dashboards in your car, and in many cases, the bumper on your car made out of plastics. All this stuff comes from oil. And the administration says, we're going to shut down the oil business and put them out of business. That was his words. We are going to put them out of business, which basically says, I intend to kill this economy so it cannot exist as it does today. That is truly transformational change.
They're not investing in more drilling and more production when he said, you know, we're going to stop your ability to even be in business. But in the meantime, if you wouldn't apply a whole ton of your capital to this problem that I've created, I'd appreciate that. So that's not getting any real relief right now.
That's right. Anyway, so we do have inflation that is affecting us, but the focus is on the wrong side of the equation on how we're going to deal with it. We can bring prices down if supply was higher. And the million barrels a day released from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve,
sure,
the SPR. Well, we've released 5 million barrels so far. That's not what's driving down the price of gas, because we need refineries to do that, and we don't have enough refineries in this country. We import gasoline, and the 5 million barrels of SPR release were sold to India and China while we buy Russian oil. Does this make any sense whatsoever?
Stop and try to figure that out for a minute. Yeah, how does that work to the benefit of this country? We don't know. We don't know how that's supposed to work.
The one thing that is working for investors is that the cost of investing at Charles Schwab is coming down. We have reported on this for some time as the competition for managing your money, holding it for however long they can, the competition between Schwab and Vanguard and BlackRock and Fidelity, State Street is cutthroat. And that's to your benefit.
Yeah.
So Schwab is chopping ETF fees not long after Vanguard raised some again. These two, we have to call them mega firms. They are converging on each other's business models and pricing. So how low can fees go and stay in business? Well, one of the things that happens with mutual funds and exchange traded funds is it's very rare to find a Peter Lynch anywhere in the system anymore.
Correct. Yeah.
Active managers, stock pickers, they've been replaced with computer algorithms. So if you have enough revenue coming in, you can keep cutting fees as long as the revenue's large enough to pay for continual security updates and dealing with the SEC regulations and audits and all the stuff that comes with being in that business. It's expensive. And you have to keep your website updated and friendly and secure. I mean, that all costs money. But as long as you're still got enough assets in the hopper, you can lower your fees and make other competitors disappear. And that's the business that's going on. So Schwab's no longer in San Francisco, the home office. I mean, they've moved to Westlake, Texas. But they are dropping their fees, not across the board, but on funds that have enough money where they can cut fees and still maintain a margin of profit. And that's good for investors and all, specifically the ones. Yeah, specifically the ones are in a couple of their bond funds. Their TIPS, we were just talking about inflation bonds. Well, the TIPS are inflation bonds, and that one, they've cut their expense fees by one basis point from 0.05 to 0.04. Well, and the bonds, which don't pay a lot. Well, it TIPS do now. The inflation bonds are pretty high. But anything in the bond market you can shave a little bit off on the fees is good for the investors. And one of the things that we quoted in the webinar today was a fixed income chief strategist at J.P. Morgan. She was reported in Bloomberg. She didn't publish it, but she was covered in Bloomberg this last week. And she said, if you've been in cash instead of bonds over the last 1, 3, or 5 years, yes, she said, if you've been in cash for 5 years, you're better off than if you'd been in bonds. That's hard to believe.
How about that? Yeah, that's one of those things that we have never seen before. Welcome to the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, and her benchmark for that was the Barclays, it's a global aggregate bond index, which finished on Friday down more than 11%, if I recall correctly. It finished down 11.26 year to date. That's your safe haven for those of you who are still in a 60-40 kind of bond stock portfolio, which we don't use and have suggested for some time, is way out of date with the reality of the current market and especially the anomalies that are in the market this year. Perry, why don't we go ahead and transition out of this segment?
Sure enough. Let's go ahead and take our bottom of the hour break here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have a weekly email newsletter, The Week in Review. If you'd like to begin receiving that, you need to send us an email. Send that to help@irradio.com. That's help@irradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line And then we just need your first and last name in the body of the email, and you'll begin receiving that on Monday. The Week in Review is a really good look at the topical things about finance and the economy and investing that you have seen in the news. Gives you a pretty good update on which of those are really important things that you need to pay attention to. And it's a really good filter for all the noise that's out there, because so much of the stuff you see in here, you can safely ignore. And we like to keep you up to date on what that is. This afternoon, please feel free to give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's got to be a
Well, this year in the market, there's been a lot of rain. Again, mostly rain. There are so many anomalies this year. Things that have never, ever happened in the stock market have happened this year. And if you were not on our webinar today, you should look for Monday's email and click on the replay link and watch it. You will see stuff that to the industry is incomprehensible. How did this happen? Why is this happening? Nobody has an explanation for it, but it has never happened before, and things that are supposed to work direction A aren't anymore. Why? Why not? Why doesn't financial theory work in this market? We don't know why. All we know is it isn't, and we try to explain that in the webinar. Anyway, watch. If you don't get the Week in Review, send us an email, help@iriradio.com. We'll add you to the list. It's a freebie, and you'll get that. We usually send it out on Mondays. Holidays cause some exception, and sometimes we miss a Monday. But generally, Mondays, that goes out. Try to update you on things that we believe are relevant to understanding the general economy and what's happening that may have some impact on your investment decisions, particularly if you're doing this yourself, or you've got a financial advisor who really isn't paying a lot of attention, but is willing to hold your hand when you're worried. And that's what they do, is they hold your hand. And we know that business model because we were trained in it and operated in it.
Indeed,
for years until the 08 market came around. And we said, there's something wrong with this. This investment model doesn't work in a down market. What on earth is wrong? And that's why we changed our business model and what we do. One thing that has really changed, and I think in large part this is because of the pandemic and the government largesse that happened around the world. I mean, you would think that every central banker around the world got on the phone and called Mr. Powell and said, what do we do now? And he said, shut the business down, send out a lot of money, and we'll work our way through the problems later, because right now we just have no clue what should be done in this mess. And that's what they did.
Cash. Yep. Yep. And it did seem very coordinated. It was worldwide.
So they took up Ben Bernanke's helicopter money. Helicopter money will solve lots of stuff. In fact, it was something I mentioned in the webinar today. One of the congressmen was interviewed on Fox Business yesterday, and I happened to be in the room when he's on. And the question was, well, we have all these people who aren't going to work. We have all these jobs that business and government want to fill. They need people, which has never happened in a recession before. Recessions, typically, people are getting laid off. And that's not happening. They're saying, I'll hire you. I'll hire you. So they asked the congressman, what's going on here? He said, well, you would not believe the number of calls we get every day asking, when am I going to get my next stimulus check? They don't want to go to work. They want the government to send the money to pay their bills.
It's so nice when that happens. Yeah. I'm a lot more comfortable with that model, they say. Yeah.
Yeah, I am. I can stay home on the couch and watch TV. I don't worry about what Fox Business says. Yeah. I just get my government check and my stimmy Give me my stimmy, and I'll go buy some more groceries. Anyway, we have Ann on the phone with a question about I-bonds. Ann, you're on the air.
Yes, I have I-bonds that I bought 10 to 15 years ago, and I would like to cash them in. And I heard you speak about them today, and it sounded like it was a difficult process to get the money out.
Well, I've never heard of anybody cashing in their I-bonds yet, but I do know that cashing in E and double E bonds is a process. It is what we were talking about is the difficulty of buying I-bonds. Mm-hmm. My guess is you need to contact, since you're on the air here, I mean, we do have people who listen from out of state. Are you local to the Seattle area?
Yes.
Okay, so my guess is you need to contact the Federal Reserve Office in Seattle, the Treasury Office, and ask them how to do that. You might be able to do it online, but I kind of doubt it. So
Federal Reserve Office?
Right. Yeah, if you can contact your bank or you have a brokerage office, and you can contact them and see if they have. I doubt that they will do it. I mean, that's what happened with the double E's. People take them into the bank and say, well, I bought these here. I want to cash them in. The banks say, well, yeah, we can sell them, but we can't cash them. So you got to go to the federal government, which, as you know, I'm sure, is a highly efficient organization in dealing with its customers.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
So once you get through the process, appreciate a call back and give us an update on how easy
how'd that
it was.
Go? Yeah.
Yeah. How'd that go? That's a better way to ask the question.
Okay.
Yeah. We would like to know. Okay. Thank you. Thanks for being out there. So that frees up a line. Number's 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. But our current discussion is about how well prepared investors are for this recession. Because again, this time is different from any other time in the past. And in some regard, that's due to all the money that was doled out in stimulus checks, as a result of the pandemic. And people were conditioned, hey, I don't have to work. Government sends me money. It's not this government. It's that government. It's not the feds. It's the state, maybe the county. I mean, if you're in California now, the governor has decided that gas is too high, so we'll just send you some money to help pay for your gasoline. Now they have to borrow it from you to give it back to you.
They must have a lot of spare cash in California. Yeah, got a lot of money down there. Just hand out some more.
Yeah, I don't remember if they have a surplus or not, but be that as it may, the fact is that consumers actually have more savings coming into this recession at all income levels than ever before. And actually the lower 50% of household income have more relative cash savings than the high end does, which was a bit of a surprise. I mean, we generally assume that lower households have already spent the money, and they haven't.
Spent it all, yep.
They did something responsible. They paid down debt, and they saved what they could. Who ever thought of doing that? Clean up
Nobody
my balance
saw that
sheet.
One coming, I guarantee you. That no now, one saw coming or things that haven't happened. Oof.
Yeah, part of the whole assumption was we'll give these people money. The economy runs on consumers spending money. They'll spend it, and that'll get the economy turned around. Except when they did that, they said, well, you can't leave your house except for groceries and health care. No, you can't go to the mall. And if you do, we're going to make it really difficult for you. And people said, I'm not going to put up with the hassle. We'll just save the money. So one more government assumption gone amok.
And it's usually behavior. That's what they always miss. They assume taxes are, higher taxes are going to bring in more money because nobody's going to change their behavior. And then during a pandemic, when there's a huge amount of uncertainty, they assume, well, if we just send out the money, everyone's going to just spend it all. And they didn't. They were like, you know what? Things are kind of bad. Maybe I should sit on some of this for a little while. And, good for us. They did. So now we're in much better shape than we could have been. But it's just another one of those things that the government doesn't see coming.
Well, and overall, households are healthier and wealthier. Their debt ratio is lower relative to their income and their total assets than it has been in a long time. So that's good, and that's part of the assumption that this recession won't last real long, except that if inflation continues higher, which many think it will because it wasn't totally caused by the Fed, and if the Fed didn't cause it, they can't reverse it. So this goes back to another issue that we illustrated on the webinar today, and that is the Fed has a trolley car problem. Which track is it going to take? Is it going to be aggressive in raising rates and cause a recession, or will it avoid the recession and allow inflation to get higher? So if you're a longtime listener, you know, we've said the Fed's put themselves in a box and it's going to be really hard to get out of it. And that's where they are now, trying to figure out what it was or where what they did wrong. I don't know if they're, I'm sure they're asking that question. But remember how transitory inflation was the was the mantra for over a year.
They already
had inflation data that said this is a problem. But they didn't believe it. And so now they're telling us it will be a soft landing and we won't have a recession.
That's what they're attempting. They're at least saying out loud that they think they can still get a soft landing, which means reining in inflation without pushing the economy into a recession. But the way the numbers are unfolding, it really doesn't look like that's going to be possible.
Transitory inflation was a story. If we can just get the public to believe it, then the problem will go away.
Yes, indeed.
So now it will be a soft landing. If we can just get the public to believe it, then the problem will go away. Except we've never had inflation above 5% and not had a recession. Not ever. And we're above 5%.
Yeah.
the inflation
never happened before.
The production manager inflation is over 10% already. What will solve that problem? The economy slows down. There are indicators that that's the case. Consumer spending is changing. Grocery stores are reporting that buyers are coming in less frequently and they're not buying brand name stuff. This is kind of like the 2008-2009 recession. People shifted to generic brands because they were cheaper. They were laid off. They had less money on unemployment. So they're much more conservative in spending. Well, today it's gasoline is like the layoff. It's robbing them of flexibility. So when they get to the store, they're a lot more careful in what they buy and they stock up so they don't have to come back midweek. That's a change in consumer behavior. Now, all of that hasn't quite hit discretionary spending yet, but it's on its way. The discretionary exchange-traded fund, the ticker is XLY, is down 28% year-to-date. Anticipating that problems that showed up at Target, for instance, that earnings are down, inventory problems are present, supply chain problems are still there. This is not a quick turnaround situation. Some of those supply chain problems, a lot of them come out of China because we've offshored tons of manufacturing. Which over the next couple of years, I do believe will come back. There is a push among many CEOs to say, I'm not going to put up with that risk in China. But the assumption recently was China's going to open up again. Until last week, when Shanghai had another outbreak of COVID and shutdowns were back on their schedule.
There you go. That's another one of those things that we have no control over. We are not part of the solution there, and we're not going to be able to influence that to any significant degree. We just have to deal with it on our end, which is why consumers are spending less. So like what we can do is if prices continue to go up, we're going to respond by not buying as much stuff. And like we've said many times, Don, a lot of times the truth is higher prices cure higher prices because people just stop buying. And that's what's happening with gas. You know, price of gas is backing up a little bit right now. People are driving fewer miles. Once it started here in Washington State hitting, you know, pushing $6 a gallon, people were like, nope, that I'm going to have to start slowing that down. And that affects the price, supply and demand. We should go out of here and get our last break here, Dom. We've got our last break of the day. I'd like to remind everyone that we have our next stock market update webinar set for Saturday, August 6th at 9 a.m. You can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. You can register on the webinar page. And then on August 6th, you just click the link. You're going to get back and you will be live online with us. It's a real good place to get an update on what's going on out there in the markets and the economy. And of course, we have plenty of time to get your questions answered. So go ahead and get registered now and be with us on Saturday, August 6th. Again, you can register at iriradio.com. We still have plenty of time to get your question on the board. We've got a full segment left. If you'd like to talk to us this afternoon, give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The only one thing you can do, take it higher, take it higher. That's what we are all waiting for with regard to the market. We're not waiting for the Fed to take it higher because that has a negative impact on our lifestyles and our businesses, on virtually everything that we pay. The other thing that is going higher, if you consider that it is no longer zero, is your savings account and your checking account now pay something. Not very much. If you're online looking for a savings account, you can find a little higher interest rate. It's still probably less than 1% a year. So it's not going to change your lifestyle unless you have tens of millions of dollars to put in the deposit.
Not a giant change, yeah.
But the online banks just simply don't have the expense of somebody standing at a desk or a counter being willing to talk to you. I mean, it's online, which, as we were talking before, if you want to buy I-bonds, the online banks are of zero help. They are not going to help you get your certification that you need. High-yield accounts are around, but that's, you know, you can buy some certificates of deposit, but you're not going to get a lot of money. As I mentioned in the last segment, one of the analysts over at J.P. Morgan last week basically said, if you've been in cash for the last 5 years, you've beat bonds because bond risk were far greater than anybody thought in an inflationary environment. And that's just the way things worked out. The assumptions, the finance 101 assumptions have been destroyed this year. And the Goldman Sachs, the illustration I used in the webinar from Goldman Sachs was, it doesn't matter. It's no big deal. Just close your eyes, play Rumpelstiltskin, and come back in 5 years, and it'll all be over. Unless, of course, it's not, which does happen. I mean, the last bear market that was not resolved by government largesse would be the 07, 08, and 09 housing crunch. That took more than 5 years to get even. And the tech bubble, of course, that took 13 or 14 years to get even. So maybe if you just close your eyes and wait for 5 years, like Goldman Sachs suggests, you might want to go back to sleep from now and take another look at it later. So are we at a bottom? Is the market actually ready to bottom out? I mean, last week we had the S&P rallied 6.4% in 1 week. That was a big week, but then it reversed itself. And so it we temporarily were above the minus 20 bear market benchmark. And then we aren't. Again, we're back below that. So calling for a bottom, saying this is all over, just put your money in the market, just buy some good, solid companies, and in another 4, 5, 10 years, you'll be good. I remember that question on Marie Bartiromo's show, asking an analyst, well, are you buying this market? Do you think we should tell our clients, our customers here, to be buying in this market? He said, well, if you don't need the money for 10 or 20 years, then you probably have a good buying opportunity here, but I'd be a little worried. Okay,
which is it. Yeah, pretty much true anytime. And we talk about that all the time, about how during a bear market, that's when you're going to get some of the biggest updates in the market. That's when they show up. And that doesn't mean the trend has changed. Even if you get a good week, that doesn't mean the trend has changed. It just means that the market's having a little bit of a dead cat bounce, and probably not a good time to buy. That's what this looks like right now. When we get a good day, we don't jump in. The trend is still negative right now, and you need to really be careful where it is you're going to re-enter the market if you're going to venture in there right now.
So good days come from two things. One, some of Wall Street firms are doing a little short-term manipulation to generate profits, or you do get a resurgent buy the dip retail investor coming in, though that has been subsiding. We have Jimmy on the phone from Seattle. Jimmy, you're on the air here with KTTH.
Hello.
Go ahead, sir.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't it be better just to go into a recession or this bear market? I don't know if we're in one, and just get it done and over with.
Cleaning house faster is a better way to resolve excess. Yes. But nobody likes it. It's kind of like
politicians.
Yeah, right. Or the Fed. I mean, the Fed doesn't like it. Nobody who's going to be in media is going to be happy about it. But you're right. Part of why we're here is because of government manipulation. They're the elitists. They know what's good for us. And so they think they know what's good for us now. But if you let the market work, we probably would have had a smaller, if we let the market work, we probably have a shorter recession, but a deeper sell-off in stocks. And it would flush out companies that should not be in business anymore. They'd either go bankrupt, which cleans out irresponsible management, bad management, or they get merged with a company that has the money and can make something out of their resources. So that is, that's good. Your assumption, I think, is correct. So thanks for the call, Jimmy. We also have Jim from Olympia on the line. And I missed seeing that on the board, Jim, so I'm sorry you had to wait so long. So you're on the air now.
Well, this is Jimmy Day.
Yes, it is.
Exactly.
The guy before me is Jimmy.
Jimmy's on the air.
Yeah, Jimmy's on the air. I've been looking at the I-bonds for about the last week and a half, and I went into their website, and there's a lot of information in there, a tremendous amount of information. And I signed up. I've got my account. No problem at all. Now I just have to send in my money. I haven't done that yet. I've been waiting for the bank transfers. But there's also a site on their part of their website that gave the history of the I-bond for the last 15, 20 years. And I never saw it go below 8%. And it's usually between 8 and 11%, as high as 11% in the last 15 to 20 years. I'm not looking at the website now. So when I saw that, unless I misread it, what's your feeling? The fixed rate right now is zero. I think you call it zero. It'll go from zero to 1% or something. I think when you sign up, I guess that's what you get permanently. But and, of course, it's 9.62% right now. Do you think that's accurate, that it's been never below like 8% in the last 15, 20 years?
The government would never lie to you, would they?
Well, I don't know. I'm
assuming
that's why you're limited on how much you can buy.
It's right on the website, you know.
So I would assume if that's what they're telling you they've paid out, then that's what they've paid out. I mean, I don't know.
Does that make sense, though?
That's
a tremendous return for 15 years.
That's true, other than you have a limited amount of money that you can actually put in any given year. So it's not like you can dump your portfolio in there and have access to it next month if you need to take some out. That if they've averaged 8% over the last 15 years, that's certainly less risk and as good a return, if not better, than you would have had out of the stock market, which had better years, but also on a buy and hold 15-year basis had a lot of bad years in the process. So other than I'm not sure how liquid these are, I would never tell anybody not to buy an I bond, but you're limited to $10,000 per person per year,
and you're also tax deferred until you take the money out.
Yeah, so that's a benefit. We're running out of time here, Jim. Okay. I just got right in my headset. They just told me clock is almost done. Thanks for the call. We don't have time for another call online today, but we can take one during the week. And during the week, the number is 800-317-9119. That's 800-317-9119. And anyway, we were mentioning the bottom of the market. And if there's anything that should indicate that we're at a bottom, and that's the American Association of Independent Investors. They are the most bearish that they have been since the end of the great financial collapse. And that's usually a contrarian indicator. But then we didn't have rising inflation. We didn't have limited energy. There are a lot of things that are different. So the reasons for being pessimistic are more prevalent than they were at the bottom of the great financial collapse. You want to talk to us during the week. Again, the number is 800-317-9119. If you don't receive our week in review, send us an email, help@iriradio.com. We're out of time. God bless you, your family, and God bless the United States of America. Talk to you next week. Have a great weekend.